Let's do it.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, 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 oh. Oh, that's a double hit. It's a time of Saturday. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's African American Empowerment. It's Marvin Roan and a group coming to you live. And in color, we got an excellent show for you today. We're recapturing the African mind with Dr. Bruce and much, much more. You know it's Black History Month, y'all. Come on, let's get going then. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Better love. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. There is no better love than for self and kind. No better love. Welcome to Empowerment Saturday and another Saturday of motivation and empowerment for African Americans or people of African descent. You call it what you want, right? We got a lot of names, and we got to coalesce those names to become one again, unified in our consciousness. Now, we're not monolithic. We're not one, but we are one group that have moved across the world, and now we're here. And so I'm speaking to the descendants of many of our Africans who came across on ships or who were enslaved in America or in the islands or over in South America or anywhere over the globe. So we're narrowing it down, though, because we're talking about empowering our people to help ourselves, to help each other help ourselves. And there's nothing wrong with that. We have to get to a point where we begin to do the repair of the brokenness that we have in many areas, political, mental, spiritual, social, cultural. Those are the things that we're talking about here. And the empowerment has to move forward in our educational systems, right? In the places in which we have our kids and our parenting and our relationships. And so we have to go back to move forward. We have to stand code for this thing. And we're going to have to learn how to work together to improve ourselves. And now for the mission of the NAAEA, that's the National African American Empowerment Association. And our mission is to empower our people, to ensure that our people's needs are met through the development of programs and services that support, inspire, motivate, and empower each member, each community, wherever you are. We will collaborate with one another, with existing community-based organizations to bring about change, a much-needed change, and to promote peace in our communities and within ourselves. You're probably asking, Marvin Roan, what is peace? And I say it's the peace concept. This is just one of many. That is a political agenda, right? I'm spelling it out. P is political. It's politics. We need a political agenda. If we're going to live here, we have to understand the politics, and then we have to move and shift that politics or political agenda to our favor, wherever we are. E is economics. You need economics in this country. You need money in the land of milk and honey. But not only do you need it, you need to learn how to produce it, to manufacture it, to save it, to invest it, and to create generational wealth. We do, because our kids need it. Not only the ones that are not here now, but the ones, again, who are yet to come. We have to create that for them. That's if we're going to be here. And if we move somewhere else, it's the same thing. We need to create an economic base for ourselves. A, this is critical, is athletics, right? And under the A, it's health, wellness, fitness, nutrition. You're going to have to commit to taking care of your physical health, right? Some of us get shaky on that one. You're going to have to take care of your body. You're going to have to take care of your mind. You're going to have to do the work of pushing back from the table, right? A lot of us, again, we lead the league in health disparities, right? Many of us are educated, but we're sick. Many of us have all the knowledge that we need, but we're not healthy. We don't work out. We don't condition. We don't train. We don't develop. You don't have to be a world-class athlete, but you do have to make sure that you have longevity so you can be around to educate and train the next generation. You just do. And so it calls for mental, physical, and emotional, spiritual, and cultural development. It just does. And you're going to have to commit to that. We're going to have to commit to changing some of our ways and that we begin to improve our ways, right? Eating healthy foods that meet and match our genetics is what we need to do. Are you willing to commit to that change? Lastly, Let's work toward beginning to work on the parts of ourselves that we need to work on emotionally and mentally, right? We need to do that. We need to make sure that we're taking care of our mental health, because there are mental health disorders and disabilities going on out here, and we're going to have to work toward managing that, managing stress, right? And I want to share with you, and you go out and research it, diathesis stress model. Stress is so important to your health, so you're going to have to maintain your stress level, right? Go out and look it up for yourself. If you maintain a healthy stress level, your body will maintain it for you. It's always trying to create homeostasis and balance. So keep that balance going. And now to C. C is culture. Relevant cultural programs. We need them. We need relevant cultural programs like this one and many, many more that teach, train, and develop our people. We have to recondition our people. We have to recondition ourselves to love one another, who we are, what we look like, and what we bring to the table culturally, right? We have to do that for ourselves. And lastly, it's a comprehensive education. That education means that we're going to have to develop programs and services that motivate, inspire, and get our people feeling good about who they are and what they're all about. Those are the tenets of the NAAEA. Go out and join us. www.naaea.weebly.com. That's it for today on the tenets of the NAAEA, and now the Stan Macklin moment. And what's important about Stan Macklin was he's my co-host for many years. Brother took me to Africa, showed me a lot of things, and helped become a mentor to me and a good friend. And we miss him so much, so
Stan,
we acknowledge him.
Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
And again, Stan is so right. We need those institutions that define our own reality, that give us confidence. Those institutions must be defined and created by us. Institutions that create jobs, that create the next technologies, all of those things, STEM programs that get our young people inspired to want to go and create, use their imaginations again. And that's what we're going to have to do for them. We must do that, and we must do that right now. It's urgent that we do that. And now we're going over to Brother George. Brother George, bringing you in. Oh yeah.
Bring it. What? Be right here.
Like that.
We're not going anywhere. Be right here.
Brother George, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing fine, brother. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm excited about another episode with Dr. Bruce.
Well,
what you got for us today?
That's great. Well, brother, the first thing I'd like to do is commend you for remembering Brother Stan, because just because the brother's not physically here, he put in a lot of work to make happen what's happening with us today. And that leads me right into the importance of Black History Month. I mean, I know that we acknowledge the fact that we should learn Black history all year round. But because of the conditioning of our people, that they have allowed other people to make what we've accomplished unimportant, then we only focus on it during Black History Month as an overall group of people. And so we need to take this month to prioritize how we can get our people to focus on the things that we have accomplished as a group all throughout the entire year. And I also want to commend Dr. Bridges for taking out time in his busy schedule on Saturdays to have this class for us, because he doesn't have to do this, but he does it because of what he told me years ago, because he's just a good brother that come out the community that wants to do good for his people. And to to disseminate the type of information that's in Dr. Bridges' mind, in his head, that powerful mind that he has, just full of information that he just loves to share. He just wants to just cherish us with the type of information that he has in this Recapturing the African Mind series. And I encourage you to tell anyone that you know to tune in to this series, because it is just going to get more and more powerful each time that the brother does another segment of it. And I, you know, I just love to listen to Dr. Bridges speak. He knows my favorite is the natural creation, but, you know, he's past that part now. But, you know, I can't wait, you know, to bring him on today. So back to you, Brother Mark.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. We're excited about Dr. Bruce, so let's bring him in now, Brother George. Dr. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you very much for having me this afternoon. And good to be a part of the program during this Black History Month, and hope we have quite a few listeners. I was emailing people and sending out stuff, trying to get the word out, and you were doing the same thing. So we hope we have a nice size class today. And this being African American History Month, the African American Empowerment Classroom session with Dr. Bruce Bridges is now in session. Can we start, Mr. Chairman?
Right.
All right, all right. Yes, this class is now in session. Close the door, finish your cigarettes, and put the cigarettes out in the hall, and come on in, sit down, because we're getting ready to start school here. And we're going to do some teaching today. Yeah, we're going to do some teaching today. And this, of course, being African American History Month, the African American Empowerment Program does not have a particular time that it talks about African American history. But since this is what we have in terms of celebrating our history or highlighting or spotlighting very important things in our African American history in this country, which, by the way, is a very, very, very small portion of the history of Black people. What happened in the United States, or what happened after the advent of the slave trade, bringing African people from the shores of Africa, from El Camino Castle and the various other spots on the African West Coast to this country, is a very small part of our history. What we've done in the United States is a very, very, very minute portion of the history of Black people in the world. And we'll find that out as we go on, maybe in some upcoming sessions. But what happened in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, and Richmond, Virginia, and New York and Chicago, and what happened in Los Angeles, California, and Oregon, and all over this, Massachusetts, Wisconsin, it's a very small part of our history. The greatest legacy that we have left to the world is what we accomplished before setting foot on the shores of North America. So I want to make that part real clear at the beginning of our class today. And I'm sure I'm giving some people a chance to go get the pencils and papers and iPads and get the computers or whatever they need to take notes, because we're going to get into it today. But this being African American History Month, and as we said on last week, it was started by Dr. Carter G. Woodson. Just to repeat to some students who might have missed class, want to get you caught up, started by Dr. Carter G. Woodson, who was born in 1875 and who died in 1950. Dr. Woodson worked real hard to establish African American History Day, as it was called at the particular time. And then it became Negro History Week, and now we have African American History Month. And interestingly enough, and I don't know quite how they do it, but in England, they celebrate African-American history in October. Now, I don't exactly know how they rationalized that, but especially since Dr. Woodson established it during the first couple of weeks in February in honor of Abraham Lincoln and the birthday of Frederick, Abraham Lincoln. And so I don't know how the British do that. But anyway, that's another story. But I'd like to bring a very good point out about African-American history before we get into the book. And I want to acquaint our listeners with a African-American manufacturer or an inventor, if you want to call it that, or a builder of automobiles. He built automobiles before Henry Ford. Now, this is a little-known fact, and the brother has almost been he's not erased from history, but very obsolete in history. But his name was C.R. Patterson. C.R. Patterson. Charles Richard Patterson, as a matter of fact, is his name. And he was born on a plantation in Virginia, born on a plantation in Virginia in 1833. Now, Mr. Patterson escaped that plantation in Virginia by going across the Allegheny Mountains and going through the woods and going across waterways and various other things, and ended up in Greenville, Ohio in 1861, just before the end of the Civil War. And when Patterson arrived in Greenville, Ohio, he was already a blacksmith, and he began to work with a company called the Simpson Company, and they were making automobiles, buses, or carriages, I guess I should say. And then later on, and to those who are sitting in the class today listening, you can go, nowadays you don't have to go to the library, you go onto your computer and read about C.R. Patterson and get more information. But just to briefly acquaint you with him, he eventually worked for one company, and then that moved from that company to another company with a man by the name of Mr. Lowe. And Mr. Lowe eventually sold out to Patterson, and Patterson began making these buggies, and they became very popular. It was called the Greenfield Patterson Buggy, and eventually his son became a part of the country, a part of the company, and they and Patterson himself, after his death in 1910, his son took the company on and started making automobiles. I think they were about four cylinders with 30 horsepower. And a highlight of the Greenfield Patterson automobile was when they began to sell, have a shipment of buses going to Haiti. And this is very important because Haiti had become independent in the year 1804 and was a tremendous, tremendous inspiration to black people in this country. And many African-American communities in the United States of America emerged because of the inspiration that they received from what Toussaint Louverture and Bookman and other people in Haiti had done. So Patterson was actually setting buses to Haiti. And it was just a proud moment, as they say, as we read the legacy of our history, when the Haitians saw these buses that were built by an African-American manufacturing company down arriving in on the island of Haiti. And that was very inspirational. So that's one thing that happened. And one another thing that's very interesting, that is that the Patterson Company did not or could not, I wouldn't say could not, but I say did not, for business purposes, put their pictures or didn't let people know that it was an African-American company. Because you look at the time that it occurred in, you can see why. And it reminds me of how in the 40s and 50s, early 60s, black people's pictures were not put on album covers. You see, because they wanted white people to buy the albums, and white people were so racist and so dogmatically against black people and the rise of black people and any contributions we were making, they wouldn't buy the product, you see. So Patterson did not let it be known that it was a black company, in the same way that black record companies like VJ Records and especially even Motown Records did not. As a matter of fact, founded by Jimmy Carter's cousin, which is another story, President Jimmy Carter's cousin, Barry Gordy, didn't put pictures of black people on the early Motown records. And also tie this in with Motown, Barry Gordy also, of course, set his company up based on the assembly line of Henry Ford, which actually aided in the demise of the Patterson Company, because the Patterson Company could not produce automobiles as quickly and as Henry Ford's company in terms of time. It would take about, I think the Ford Company could produce an automobile in about an hour and a half or 2 hours at the most. It took the Patterson Company about 12 hours to make one by hand. And of course they had more money fueling the Ford Company and various other things that caused the company to demise. But C.R. Patterson and Sons Automobile Company that produced automobiles in this country before Henry Ford is our spotlight today in our black history class before we get into the book. So, Brother Marvin, we'll want to just mention that to you and Brother George. How's that?
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. I like that. All right. Let's do some housekeeping really quick. If you are calling in, if you are listening online anywhere, the call-in number is 845-277-9250, 845-277-9250. What we want you to do this week, if you can, is to come off the online, call us, and just let us know where you're listening from, right? If you could do that, we're good. The deck is packed, so we got room for you. But if you want to call in, you don't have to say very much or have any comments or whatever. We want to tell Dr. Bruce where we're calling from today. 845-277-9250 is the number to call. Housekeeping notes: down the hall to the left is the restroom for the men. Down the hall to the right is the restroom for the women. And back to you, Dr. Bruce.
All right, let's get class started, and I guess we'll hear from some of our callers in about 2:25.
Before we get started, I want to just bring in Dr. Rogers. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, of course. Bring Dr. Rogers in any time. Let him interrupt my class. As a matter of fact, I'll sit down and listen to him and let him teach.
Dr. Rogers, are you there? Dr. Rogers.
Yes, hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
We had to get
you
in here before we got started.
And we might get you back again after I finish.
Yeah, I was listening to Dr. Bridges drop that information. That's wonderful.
Yeah, most people don't know that, Dr. Rogers. They're driving cars, and they're driving Ford Fiestas, and driving Avalons, and Nissans, and Camrys. And
that's very critical. Very critical information. It really is. And you said something that was also extremely important. A lot of people, when they think of African history, they really just think of, you know, one small area. The west coast of Africa is tiny, basically, compared to the entire continent.
Right.
And, so when you start thinking about the captivity of Africa and colonization of Africa, you got to include the Mediterranean Sea stuff. You got to include the Indian Ocean.
On the east side.
Yep, got to include all of that. You even going down to the Cape of Good Hope. Madagascar, that little island sitting right on the other side of Mozambique. Madagascar is all African people over there, and they were in captivity, and they are living now in conditions, you know, I mean, are a result of that trauma.
That's a good point you make, too, about Madagascar. A lot of people see that little island off the coast of East Africa but don't know where it is. That's us, too.
Yeah, that's it. So all of that is got to be considered, you know, because that Indian Ocean captivity is actually what built India. India.
That's right, over there in Kilwa and Mombasa, over on the East Coast, over by right. Kenya.
Right.
Kenya and Kilwa. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole nother rich history, because you start looking at the Davidian people and the Davidians.
Oh, man.
You know, when you start, so you're right. Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because we don't sometimes take that full picture.
Right. We just look at what happened in the United States of America.
Yep, that's right.
Yep.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So stay with us now, Doc.
Oh, I will. Oh, thank you so much.
All right, Dr. Rogers. Thank you for joining us, and we'll get back with you later on in the show. All right, so pens, pencils, pads, no pads, and again, we'll have question and answer with Dr. Bruce coming up at our break. So it's over to you, Dr. Bruce. Thank you again. And Brother George, thank you for a great welcome to the show today. And now, Dr. Bruce and our Recapturing the African Mind series lecture.
All right, Chapter 2 of Recapturing the African Mind, entitled, and to those who might have a copy of the book, page 45 I'm on right now, Chapter 2, Missionaries as Tools in the Mind Control of Africans. That's the title of Chapter 2, Missionaries as Tools in the Mind Control of Africans. Now, I came by this particular title for the chapter out of a series of lectures that I was doing, and the lecture was entitled The 3 M's, Missionaries, Merchants, and Military, A Team of Destruction Against Humanity. The 3 M's, Missionaries, Merchants, and Militaries, A Team of Destruction Against Humanity. Because I recognize and realize in teaching world history that Europeans would always initially send the missionaries in to the African countries, and not just the African countries, but the missionaries would be sent in to countries in the country of India, also in the United States. When you study the history of the United States, missionaries, so-called Christianized indigenous people here in this country, and so the missionaries were first, and then European colonizers would then send in the merchants. And of course, the merchants, after missionaries had taken the minds of African people from their natural spirituality and put their minds up in the sky, believing in something happening in the great beyond, and they looking up, while the merchants would come in and steal the gold, the diamonds, the cobalt, the silver, the uranium, the chromium, and other, the zinc, and other resources, mineral resources, from under the feet of the Africans. While they're looking up in the sky, the merchants coming in, taking what's beneath their feet, you see. So the merchants would come in next. You had the missionaries, to those who were taking notes, the merchants, and then European colonizers would send in the military, and the military would be there to keep you in order if you ever thought about getting out of order and doing something about your plight to keep order in the colony, you see. So this is what I want to make clear. So our second chapter is called Missionaries. But now, as I say in the title of the chapter, Missionaries as Tools in the Mind Control of Africans. And I'll explain to you why they were tools in just a few minutes. I also start this chapter off with a quote from Bob Marley. And Bob says, "The Babylon system is the vampire, sucking the blood of the children day by day, building church and university, deceiving the people continually." And many of you who are familiar with the songs and words, lyrics by Bob Marley, it's a song that he wrote and performed called The Babylon System. And he said, the Babylon, and Dr. Rogers likes this song too. He said, the Babylon system is the vampire, sucking the blood of the children day by day, building church and university, deceiving the people continually. Now, let's just take those two important institutions. both those institutions, church and university, have to do with what is with what penetrates the mind of the person. The church on Sundays or Saturdays, if you're a Jehovah's Witness, or on Friday or whatever day you may go, but the church deals with what goes into your mind, and so does the university. When you go to school, the teacher controls what goes into the mind of the student, you see. So the Babylon system is the vampire sucking the blood, the life force of the children day by day, building church and university, deceiving the people continually, you see. So the chapter starts off, after millions of years of observation, as we talked about before, in the natural creation, study and analysis of the natural creation, Africans developed great civilizations, Kush and Kim, however, through subsequent conquest, the idealism and spirituality of the ancient African civilizations gave way to materialism of the Greeks and later the Romans. And then African civilization began to decline at the behest of Eurocentric Christianity as a tool for mind control. Now, many things that I'm talking about that can be subjects within themselves, and you can get more information on them. But I want to start off with talking about a meeting that was held in 325 AD, which is called the Council of Nicaea. The Council of Nicaea. And sometimes it's just spelled N-I-C-E, or sometimes it's spelled N-I-C-A-E-A, the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD. Now, this was a meeting that marked the entry of the Christian church into the world as it is understood by the masses today. The church, after 325 AD, was to become the ruler of the entire world. And this rulership for Rome and the rest of Europe developed a definite political theory and policy. And Dr. Clark used to talk about this, and he was saying, he would talk about, as I'm saying here, ultimately Christianity, it was prepared to be used as a political weapon for Europe. And as it became a weapon for Europe, the Pope became very important in this. And just beneath the Pope in the Catholic, because the Pope is, of course, you know, there's a hierarchy. You got the Creator or God, and you got the Pope, who is next to God. He's next in line, and any problem that you have getting to God, you just go to the Pope. Pope will get you straight now. Just go to the Pope here. You go to the Pope, and he'll talk to God for you. You see, so you know, you do your confessions and all that. But Christianity was prepared as a political weapon for Europe, and the Pope had become, in just a few centuries, the high priest, the judge, and the divine monarch of all the Christian territories in the world. And just beneath the Pope, as I say, I'm talking about this hierarchy, was the cardinals, who were considered the princes of the Roman Catholic Church. And these cardinals, they acted as counselors for the Pope and were appointed by him. And when we look at the origin of the word cardinal, and this is another thing to those who are students in our podcast classroom today on the African American Empowerment Program, we're going to be looking at the origins of words. And now, if you study the origins of words, that particular field of study is called etymology. Etymology, E-T-Y-M-O-L-O-G-Y, etymology, the study of words and their origins. And this is one thing that made Malcolm, the presenter, the speaker, the teacher that he was, because of his study of words. And to those who, of course, have read the autobiography of Malcolm X, you know that when Malcolm was incarcerated, he studied the dictionary. That was one of his favorite books. And they say that Malcolm read the dictionary all the way from A through Z. And this gave him a very, 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 very good context in which he could use to speak by using a dictionary and going into word origins. And when you study the history of Marcus Garvey, that's another thing about the study of history. We relate things that happen in one part of the world to another part of the world, or happen in one time period in history to another time period. You'll find that Marcus Garvey, when he was a boy growing up in St. Anne's Bay, Jamaica, he studied the dictionary almost every day, learning words in the dictionary. And they say that when Garvey was studying the dictionary, you could pick out any word in the little dictionary that they had in Jamaica and ask Marcus the meaning, and little Marcus could tell you the meaning of that particular word. And this helped him in his elocution, his elegant elocution, or his ability to speak when he came into this country. So in our class here on the African American Empowerment Podcast, we're going to be talking about the origins of words, because you learn quite a bit when you look at the very root of the word. But the word cardinal, which was the third tier after God, after the Pope, and then the cardinal. The name cardinal is actually derived from the Latin word which means hinge or turning, and sometimes they talk about the cardinal point, and it indicates how important this office is in Catholicism. And the affairs of the church are administered by the cardinals, and they have privy to most of the information in the office of the Pope. So the cardinal is very, very, very important, because everything hinges upon that office of the cardinal. And when we also find out that in the many scholars and writers of church history since 325 A.D., after the council now, have referred to that period of the 4th through the 16th century as the age of papal forgery. And, of course, that word papal, P-A-P-A-L, some people say papal, papal, comes from the word papa, which means pope, because you know the pope is your father. Those who are tuned in, y'all know now the pope is your daddy. Now the pope is your father, you see. So when you start talking about the papacy or the papacy or papal, it's talking about your father, the pope, all right? But the 4th through the 16th centuries was considered the age of papal forgery. There were forged forged canons, trickery, lies, and deceit were used to add more strength power of the Pope. And this power resulted in the masses believing anything emanating from the papacy. Anything that the Pope says is true. Now, if you look at that, we're talking about hundreds of years ago. And if you look at it today, look at the power that the Pope even has in the world today. That power still exists and has not diminished, but you notice now people are beginning to question several things that the Pope says or has said, and the news was talking about how the Pope is not intervening on the Benedict did not intervene when the Popes were messing with the little boys and in the church and that kind of thing. And that's nothing new to it. That's another subject. I have a book called Crimes of the Popes. So all this stuff, you know, we have to emancipate our minds from mental slavery and begin to free ourselves from these traditional dogmas and this traditional learning and training that we have. We got to break out of it. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. And so the Pope was our when it came to the Christian church. And I think I might have talked about last week, and I'm going to mention it again because we always have new people coming into class. Alvin Boyd Kuhn, K-U-H-N. Alvin Boyd, B-O-Y-D, Kuhn, K-U-H-N. And I'm doing the spelling because I know a lot of you are going to want to look this up and to learn more about what I'm saying. And check me out, no problem. But Alvin Boyd Kuhn wrote a book called The Shadow of the Third Century. Shadow of the Third Century. And on page 9, he says, and I'm quoting Alvin Boyd Kuhn. This is not Dr. Bridges saying this in my own mind, but Alvin Boyd Kuhn said on page 9 in his book, Shadow of the Third Century, he says, from the very start, facts were ignored and disdained or twisted into false shape for partisan purposes. listen very carefully to what the church fathers did now, according to Alan Boyd Coon. This is very interesting. These are church people, church fathers now, close to God. From the very start, I mean from the very beginning, facts were ignored and disdained or twisted into false shape for partisan purposes. Ancient documents of great significance, listen to me now, ancient documents of great significance were, these are not my words, were misconstrued, tampered with, listen carefully now, and mutilated, and always wholly misconceived as to their real import. They were misconstrued, y'all know what that means, they were tampered with and mutilated or destroyed, and always wholly misconceived as to their import. Talking about church documents now. Then he goes on saying, in Shadow of the Third Century, Alvin Boyd Coon, the author, he says, other documents were piously fabricated out of pure fancy, and foisted. Foisted means just pushed upon you, and foisted, F-O-I-S-T-E-D, and foisted upon the gullible as true narrative of holy event. In other words, you were given things, or things were pushed upon you, or forced upon you, or foisted upon you, upon the gullible, as true narrative of holy event. And then he says in his last sentence from this particular quote, The Shadow of the Third Century by Alvin Coon, on, he says, and finally, every interpretation was rendered in strict and unfailing accord with the monstrous bias, fanatical religionism generated in heavy ignorance. So this whole third century, this whole period from the fourth, after 325, the plan for the church to create Christianity as a political weapon was forced upon the masses of the people by misconstruing, tampering with, mutilating, and giving you lies to make you believe so that you could be cold. In another book, not just Alvin Boyd Coon, another book called Bible Myths, M-Y-T-H-S. People say, what do you mean, Bible myths? In Bible Myths and Their Parallels in Other Religions by T.W. Doan, he says, Doan says, leaving from Coon now, going to T.W. Doan, and to those who might need this, these are white people saying this. Some people need that, these people saying this now. Y'all believe it now. Okay, but T.W. Doan says that besides forging, lying, and deceiving for the cause of Christ, the Christian fathers destroyed all evidence against themselves and their religion which they came across. You see, and I think I did go over this last week, but that's okay. Christian divines or religious people seem to have always been afraid of too much light. The Christian leadership, they didn't want the people to have too much light. And in the very infancy of printing, Cardinal Wolsey foresaw its effect on Christianity, and in a speech to the church, he publicly forewarned them that, quote, if we do not destroy this dangerous invention, meaning the printing press, it will one day destroy us. So nobody in the Christian church or from the Pope on down wanted the people to have knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, and to analyze and to question. They wanted you just to believe what was coming out of the papacy in Rome, what your father was telling you, the Pope, what he was telling you. They wanted you to believe that. Now, I want to make a point right here perfectly clear that what I'm talking about now is not the Christian religion. It's been given to us as the Christian religion, but Christianity, as did all the religions that we know about in the world today, originated in Africa. And they were altered and changed into what we have today, and this is what I'm talking about, how things were misconstrued and changed and tampered with. So what we have today is not really Christianity. The original Christianity is from the heads and minds of African people down by the banks of the Nile River thousands of years ago. And that's another story. But I'm just saying what we've been given today is not really Christianity. And then as we begin to end section, one way that the Pope and his followers were able to spread the word of Christianity around the world, and jumping up to page 50 here, as I talk about the seal and sword in Africa, and the Pope began to divide the world. And on page 51, I say that when an accurate analysis of world mind control by Europeans is made, let me repeat that, when an accurate analysis of world mind control by Europeans is made, it becomes clear that perhaps its origin has to be traced to the issuance or the issuing of the papal bull, P-A-P-A-L, the papal bull or the seal of demarcation of May 5th, 1493, which established a line between the colonial possessions of Spain and Portugal. Now, you all who are tuned in, you might want to look this up on your own later, but you can go into your encyclopedias on the computer and look up the papal bull of 1493, and it talks about how the Pope divided the whole world up between the Spanish and the Portuguese, who were the major powers coming out of Europe at that time, and gave Spain certain territories that they were allowed to conquer and to colonize, and gave Portugal the same mandate that they could only take and control certain countries and certain islands. And this was called the Papal Bull, and I'm not going into it completely today, but you can look that up on your own, the Papal Bull. And that's how the world, that's how certain parts of the world today are colonized by the Spanish and the Philippines, for example. The French had certain colonies, and the Pope set all this up. And so for many years after that whole idea of the Council of Nicaea was held, missionaries were sent off into Africa. And as I said before, I want to make it clear that missionaries were tools, because they, as I say on page 49 of my book, they, meaning the missionaries, were often an unknowing part of this process. In certain areas of Europe, there was no familiarity with the Jesus Christ. In certain areas of Europe, even among white people, though people had their own beliefs in gods and goddesses, many Europeans clung to gods and goddesses tenaciously, especially in the rural areas. And this is where you get the whole idea of paganism. Christians began to refer to those who kept their beliefs in the old gods and goddesses as pagans, you see, because after the Council of Nicaea, Europe was trying to push this weapon called Christianity that they had concocted and made up at the Council of Nicaea among everybody, including their own people. But there were many people who lived in the countrysides, which is where the word pagan come from. Pagan is a word that comes from the word pagani, a Latin word, pagani, P-A-G-A-N-I, just an I on the word pagan, pagani, and that means country dwellers, because many of the people in the countryside and in the hills and in the woods, they knew nothing about this man called Jesus. So when the missionaries came among them to push this, they still held on to their religions and their beliefs in the gods and goddesses that they all had. And because there was a tremendous resistance by the country dwellers to the Christian religion, the church decided to assimilate the old pagan customs into the new religion. They assimilated. In other words, they said, we can't beat these people who have all these beliefs in the god, like the god of Pan and the nymphs and the gods of the woods and the gods of the fields. We can't stop them from believing this, so let's mix it into Christianity. Our purpose is to get this idea of Christianity going. So since we can't beat them, let's join them. For example, events such as the pagan feast were added to the Christian calendar. Easter and Christmas, for example, which had nothing to do with Christianity, were assimilated into this new religion of Christianity that the Pope and his boys were pushing and his sisters were pushing, the missionary. They assimilated into Christianity. This can be seen in the origin of the word Easter. It was named for the Anglo-Saxon goddess of spring, Eostre. This is on page 50 of my book, Eostre. And Easter shows its pagan origin in a system of dating based upon the old lunar calendar and has absolutely nothing at all to do with the resurrection of the human Savior. But since the pagans in the woods and the people who believed in the Eostre, the goddess of spring, they weren't going to give that up, so the Christians said, let's put it in the Bible. So they put it in the Bible. And we'll go into Easter. That's another story. And another example of paganism being mixed, as I begin to end this portion today and take some questions, another example of paganism being mixed into Christianity was the whole idea of Christmas. Very early in the 4th century, December 25th was chosen by those in the northern hemisphere as the birth date of the man called Jesus because of the obvious strengthening of the sun. December 25th was the first day to noticeably lengthen after December 21st, or the winter solstice. Let me just slow up for a minute. I'm giving a lot of information here, but please, good students, go look it up, and you will find that the word Christmas is nowhere at all mentioned in the scriptures. Easter, I think, one time in the scriptures of the Bible. And December 25th is mentioned nowhere in the Bible as the birth date of the man called Jesus. But you can study science, and you can study geography, and you can study astronomy and find that the days began to get shorter around December and around December 21st, which is the first day of the winter solstice, as days began to get shorter. Solstice, S-O-L. S-T-I-C-E, just look it up, the winter solstice, S-O-L-S-T-I-C-E, sol meaning sun, and sistera, which means to stand still. It appears in the wintertime, as you and I both well know, that the sun is standing still. It seems like that when it gets dark in the evening, it's going to be a long night of darkness before the sun rises again in the morning. And they noticed that at this particular time of the year, and to those who listen to us, on this broadcast in the United States of America, December 25th is when it's noticed that the sun begins to get stronger and the days begin to get longer. They say the sun is born, but people were talking about the sun and the sky being born, you see, but they put it on the Son of God and gave it to us. And you see now days are short and they're beginning to get long. But the winter solstice, and a good source of all this, also December 25th was the birth date of Heru, or Horus, from his mother, Isis, or Set, which is the same story of Jesus and the Virgin Mary, or Set, A-U-S-E-T, or Set, or Isis. And historically, there are at least 16 crucified saviors born of a virgin on December 25th. And there are some sources that say that there's a book called The World's Crucified Saviors, The World's 16 Crucified Saviors, pardon me, by Kersey Graves. You can look it up. The World's 16, I've had these books for years. The World's 16 Crucified Saviors by Kersey Graves. And he talks about the fact that around the world, there are at least 16 other saviors that were born December 25th and were resurrected in the same way the story of Jesus came about. And also there's another one called The World's Saviors by C.H. Vail, The World's Saviors by C.H. Vail. So people who study and know, this is nothing new, and the information is out there, and it can be found. Brother Marvin, I'm going to get me a little water and take a little break for questions and give people a chance to ask questions as we continue with our Recapturing the African Mind, trying to get our minds back
here. All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Again, a lot of information. Much, much to be digested.
It's a lot.
But
it's a lot,
again, it is our history, right? And it is our. You have to do your research, right? The doctor has done his research, and he's sharing it with you. And a lot of our historians and a lot of our scholars have done the work. but the information has not been disseminated down to the people. Now, we're not asking you to change your belief system. It's understanding the process and the progress that has been made to create change of our minds and how we see the world. And so it is up to us now to recondition ourselves, not to change your belief, but to identify the source of your belief and then create a solid foundation from there. That's all we can ask. Brother George.
Very well put, Brother Martin. Very well put.
Thank you, sir.
Brother
George, I'm bringing you
in. I wanted to piggyback on what you just said. You know, if what the kind of things that Dr. Bridges is talking about is not true, then we weren't miseducated. You know, Carter G. Woodson wrote that book, The Miseducation of the Negro, The Education of the Negro. It's been so much new history that's been revealed to us during Black History Month over the years from different lectures, Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark. So if what they're talking about is not true, then we weren't miseducated. We are properly educated, and we're just doing the best that we could do. That don't make sense. That doesn't make sense. Our people are the scientific-minded people of the world, and at one time, we had very open minds. Our minds were not closed to information, even if it was a lie, because we could prove that it was a lie. So information should always be absorbed, and then you absorb it in a fashion that is related to you as a group. How could that information benefit me by using it? Oh, that's a lie. Okay, then I'll make sure that I let my people know that that's a lie. And a lot of what Dr. Bridges is saying is he's teaching you that you've been lied to for a long time. They've even wrote books that's full of lies, and so then they'll refer to those books that are full of lies to make their case. But see, we have to learn to go to the books of our ancestors that have done so much research and gave their lives and died poor so that we could recapture that African mind and be open-minded and a progressive people again. And this information that we are learning today, man, is just overwhelming. And what I suggest to our listening audience, do your research, y'all. Do your research. You know that we love y'all, and we ain't going to try to do nothing to teach nobody no lies. We done heard enough of it. So back to you, brother.
Thank you, Brother George. And again, it's the education. It's the EMPs. If we don't educate our people properly, strengthening our minds, right, giving us resources, right, giving us a girth of knowledge, then where will we be? In the same place. And so, again, it's recapturing the African Mind series to say you have a foundation that comes from the cradle. Our foundation begins with the natural creation, and then it moves forward. Although it has been altered and changed, it's still the same. It's your natural creation given back to you. And so all we want to do is to have this lecture series to talk about what that is. And we're going to open the lines up in just a few minutes when Dr. Bruce gets back. But I do want to announce 845-277-9250 is the call-in number. If you have a question for Dr. Bruce, if you have a concern or thought about what you learned today, we're going to have a dialogue now asking questions or making statements or just telling us where you're from. Dr. Bruce, back to you.
All right. I'd just like to go straight on to the lines if you want to, Brother Marvin.
All right. All right, y'all don't mind if I play my music first before we go to the first person. Here we go. I love it. All right, Brother George. Oh, yeah.
Bring it! What? We rise here. We're not going anywhere. We rise here.
We're not not going nowhere. 9872, if you're willing to talk, we're willing to listen. It's Dr. Bruce and Marvin Rome and Brother George on the Empowerment Hour. It was an hour and a half today. 9872, you're live online. Do you have a question or comment?
Sir.
Where you calling from?
Yes, sir. Dr. Marvin, Dr. George, Dr. Bridges. I would like for Dr. Bridges to speak to the correlation between Haiti and Haiti.
Okay, you like it now. What's the question again?
Haiti, the island.
Okay.
Haiti, the community,
In Durham,
North Carolina.
Okay. Good question, caller, and to those who may not quite understand what the caller is asking about, in Durham, North Carolina, there was a black community of entrepreneurs and institutions and streets and banks and just about everything you can think of. Booker T. Washington came to Durham, North Carolina, and said that it was one of the most thriving communities of black people he had found anywhere in the country. As a matter of fact, he went to some places, other places in North Carolina, and he talked about the progress that they were making. And someone said to him, Dr. Washington, it's okay what you see here, but just wait till you get to Durham. So when he came to Durham, he saw the streets lined with black theaters and black banks and clothing stores and food markets and just about it, clothes, universities, just about everything you could think of. But it was called Haiti. And going back to what I said earlier, that word Haiti, the Haiti community came from Haiti in the Caribbean when Haiti became independent in 1804. People around the country, not just Durham, but in Durham they took the name, and it was named for Haiti, or the community of black people who were independent in the island of the Caribbean. That's just a brief, and there's a black doctor by the name of Dr. Moore who went there at one point, and he found that to be the case. So Haiti in Durham was a thriving, prosperous black community, self-sustaining, which gained its name from the country of Haiti after its independence. Okay, we can go to another, Brother Marvin.
All right, thank you, Dr. Bruce. And to add, we got to get back to that. We have to get back to thriving communities, creating economic bases where we have theaters and shops, where we have money, and marketplaces where we're sharing money with ourselves. All right, 1091-1091, you're on live with Dr. Bruce and Marvin Rohn. How are you? Do you have a question or comment, or where are you calling from? 1091. All right, we'll move on to 8502.
I can't hear him. I think they're talking, Brother Marvin.
Sounds
I
like
kind of hear
television.
Him. Oh, okay,
yeah.
That's true. All
we'll
right.
We'll come back. All right, so 1091, if you want to jump in, I'll come back to you later on. 8502. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce? You're on live.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. My name is Herbert White. I'm from Durham, North Carolina. And I'd just like to make a comment on how important it is to listen to this program. I'm a friend of Dr. Bridges, and a couple of years ago, we took a trip down to New Bern, North Carolina, which is about 140 miles, about a two-hour drive. And every town that we passed through between Durham and New Bern, Dr. Bridges told me something of African significance about the history of that town or somebody from that town. Every town that we passed through gave me a historical education about that town or somebody African from that town, just off the top of his head.
Wow.
So if Dr. Bruce Bridges is on the agenda, you need to pay attention.
Thank you, brother, for that call. I maybe maybe I have more knowledge than I think I have, because I didn't know all that, but I guess maybe I did that. If you say I did it, I did it.
Okay, thank you.
Well stated. Well stated. Thank you, sir.
I want to thank the brother for that compliment, too, because I'm not used to thinking like that, but maybe so. All right.
All right, let's move over to 7841. And for those who are listening, we're going to call your last four to your phone number. If you're on the phone line, your last four will be called out, and you'll be live on the line. 7841, you're live on the Empowerment Hour with Marvin Rohn, Stan Macklin, and brother. Ooh, Stan Macklin. Stan's with us. Dr. Bruce and Brother George. 7841, do you have a question or comment? All right, we're moving on. 3347. Maybe they're just listening, Dr. Bruce. 3347, you're up next. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce?
I guess they don't want to talk, huh, brother? I'd be wanting to talk.
That's all right. All right, we'll move on down the line to 6511. 6511, 6511, you're on live with Dr. Bruce. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah. Listening to the program, very interesting, you know. Dr. Bruce Bridges, if you listen to what he said carefully, will capture the African mind. A lot of things we got to listen to what he's saying. Because I'm from the Caribbean, Antigua, and Barbuda. You hear me good?
All right, yes. Hello. Yes, sir.
You got to listen carefully because some people misinterpret what people said. That's why Bruce always spelling the word. And I keep a pen and keep record everything he said. But Bob Marley, them boys come from the Bible. Most of those songs they sing, they pick things from the Bible, you know. And
that's
it's
right.
Very interesting. You learn a lot, you know, because we have a lot of things going on in the Caribbean. They have a radio station, Come or Talk to Me. That's the station. Owned by the government. And when people speak the truth, they close down the station. And a man take up a book called Tim Hector from the island, a teacher, and his book was Outlet. Just like you have Fox. Fox tell you what's going on when CNN don't tell you. And we got to listen carefully. And I keep listening and learn a lot, you know. So keep on the good work, and I'm a friend of Dr. Bruce Bridges, and you learn by listening, okay? Have a good day. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you.
Yeah, I want to thank that caller there from calling with that prominent island accent there, brother. Marvin, that's good. He's listening, so that's good to know.
Yeah. All right, let's roll over to, thank you for calling, 9116. 9116, you're next and live on the Empowerment Hour. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce? Welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I thought it was ironic that he spoke about C.R. Patterson. I was sitting here watching the American History, and the title was Men Who Built America, right? And they were talking about Rockefeller and all these different guys and J.P. Morgan. And they had spoken on how Rockefeller had partnered with Ford because he was trying to refine his oil and find a reason to use his gasoline. So they make him look like this big, big guy who first vehicle was built. But then it was ironic to hear our speaker talk about C.R. Patterson. And
that's
the narrative,
that's
right? So I'm going to say the narrative that's being controlled by, you know, the TV, people who want us to see certain narratives and certain images, we have to create our own narrative. So a man like a C.R. Patterson can be celebrated the proper way. And then you spoke about this too, Brother Marvin, the financial backing, the community wealth, the community efforts. If C.R. Patterson had that financial backing that Ford had from Rockefeller, he'd be still prevalent right now. you know, but he's not really mentioned as a prevalent man. So I thought that was ironic, and I wanted to just make that comment.
That's a good point, brother. It sounds like the stars in the heavens are lining up. So you said that while I was talking about C.R. Patterson and his manufacturing company with the automobile, you said on television at the very same time they were talking about these white entrepreneurs and business people, huh?
Definitely. Yeah.
That's very that's kind of heavy. If some of our people who are our astrologers or our people who deal with the constellations may be able to figure that one out, but that's real interesting. But very few people know about C.R. Patterson. And one good point you make that I want to reiterate, that is, most times black people don't have the money, the investment, and the capital to actually make a business go like it really should go. And that was the case with Patterson. Not that we don't have the expertise, not that we don't have the capabilities or the abilities, but the investment money is not there. So that's a good comment that our caller made. This your first time calling, brother?
I've been listening in for a while, but I want to make this point too that these guys come from lineage money. So I always have to have the money. We can pool community wealth, you know, stuff like that. That'd be great.
That's right. That's right.
Thank
and
you.
When you really look at, before we go to another caller, when you look at the money that African American people take in terms of our entertainers and athletes and some of our other businesses in this country, this is what Marcus Garvey was talking about. Pool those resources and let's try to build and do for self. Same thing Elijah Muhammad was doing.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you very much for your call, brother. Got another one, Brother Marvin?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
Can I throw a word in there, Bruce?
Yes, sir.
Can I throw a word in there?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
I wanted to share something that I was that I heard from Brother Kaba Khomeini, formerly known as Booker T. Coleman.
Oh yeah.
And he said something to the effect that actually George Washington Carver put together the plan for Ford to mass produce cars. And
that's exactly
where the term the plant came from. Can you speak on that?
Yeah, I can. As a matter of fact,
that sounds like a contradiction because he allowed Ford to outdo the brothers.
Yeah, that's true because and there again I can't think of who it was. I got a good friend here in Durham, North Carolina. He and I talk a lot, and I was talking to him about the Williams sisters and why they're so servile and so docile and seem to go along with everything they said and have no political statements to make. And he said, well, you know, Bruce, you got to realize now what their religion is. And I'm going back to what you said. We are a kind people. I'm going back to what you said about George Washington Carver. George Washington Carver was a deeply religious man, deeply spiritual man. And we're kind to everybody. And John Henry Clark used to talk about how we are kind to a fault. We were too kind, and we are too kind to strangers and to people who have our well-being, who don't have our good well-being in their hearts. For example, when Europeans came to Africa, many times they were welcomed. Sit down and have your dinner in my home and enjoy yourself. And next thing you know, they're taking everything that we have. We're too kind to strangers. I'm going back to what you said about Dr. Carver. And George Washington Carver was that kind of person. And Henry Ford, as you read the history, used to go down to Tuskegee Institute in Alabama to visit Dr. Carver. As a matter of fact, I think it was Henry Ford who, when he found out that Dr. Carver had to walk up a couple of floors or three or four floors when he was up in age to get to his classes and to his laboratory, and Ford had an elevator system put in one of the buildings right there on the campus of Tuskegee. So they had a relationship, but as I said before, we're oftentimes too kind to strangers and people who really have they take from us. Europeans have always, that's another lecture, but they've always taken from us and robbed from us our talents, our abilities, our capabilities. everything that we have to offer, and then they use it for the benefit of themselves, and we have and we get nothing out of it. That's always been the case with us as a people.
And I want to make this clear. I didn't say that, you know, to discredit George Washington Carver. I just said it because I don't know what the circumstance was, but I just said it because if we had put George Washington Carver and Patterson together, this would have been a whole nother situation.
No apology necessary, Brother George. I understand where you're coming from, no question. But that's something else to be studied. But that's a good point. But when Europeans gave us that Christianity, it made us a servile, turn the other cheek, love your enemy type mentality that has really hurt us in many cases. Let's go to another one, Brother Marvin.
All right. Before we go, we're not here to bash white people or Europeans, but you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. I'm going over to 7841, and that's the truth. 7841, you're live. Where you calling from? Talking to Dr. Bruce, Marvin Rohn, and Dr. George
Hi.
Brown. Hey.
Hey. Peace all to all the kings, and thank you again for sharing all of the information and the knowledge. I wanted to mention that what we're being given in terms of this information should certainly not stop with today. And I'm asking that everybody that is hearing it, all the callers that comment and the callers that listen, just share some of what you've heard today, even if it's in light conversation.
And tell them about the program.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. And then share the program and invite them in. When we talk about past wealth and past achievements of our community, I want us to keep in mind that what we are today is a product of all of that, including the struggle, including the painful parts, and including all of the achievements. But we are the culmination of all of that. And what we are here present today, we actually have more access to more resources, to more information than we've ever had in our history.
That's true.
And so more than anything, I think we now have the opportunity now, even more than we did in the 50s, even more than we did in the 30s, right? And if we were able to accomplish those things at those times, imagine what we're able to do now. And so I'd like us to keep that in mind and even
good point.
Ask callers on any of the sessions, like, with this information, what do you intend to do with it now, right? Call to action, any small action. It could be to invite somebody in on the next session. It could be to mentor at a middle school. It could be anything, but what transforms all of this information into something that goes on to become historical and that goes on to actually impact our community is an action must be taken.
Okay, good point.
No matter how small, but it has to manifest into some form of action.
Good point, good point.
Thank you.
Thank you, sister. I like that. All right, 845-277-9250 is the number to call if you want to talk to Dr. Bruce, even if you just have a comment or just to tell us where you're coming from. And again, the sister is so absolutely right. Put this information or any action into action. Do something to change our plight, our situation, our community, and the future of our youth. We're going over to 9770. You're on live. Do you have a question or comment, and where you're calling from?
I'm calling from Maryland, and I really like what the sister just said, the call to action. So I think that the host has already made a comment that I was going to make, but I really like what the sister had to say, and I hope that everyone who is listening will think about that long and hard and see what it is that they can do in order to spread the word so that we can free our mind. That's all the comment I have. Thank you.
All right. I like that. Thank you, sister. I appreciate you calling in. Thank you for listening. The question or the statement is, and I want you to think about this, what is it that I can do? What is it that I can do? Dr. Bruce, what you got?
I was about to say just good to hear some of the sisters calling. If there are any other sisters in the audience who are listening, we'd like to hear from you because, you know, most of the time we hear from the brothers, but those were two excellent calls, Brother Marvin, two excellent calls. So I wanted to just say, and I also wanted to mention that the sister was talking about how we have more knowledge today than we ever have before and more finances today than we've ever had before. I think about it when I'm on the computer, and how access is tremendous to information now. I mean, information is out there. I mean, and you don't have to go to a library and look up books and go to the card catalog and find out, you know, what part of the library it's in and what section of the library it's in. But you can just go to your computer if you have one, and most people have one, or to the library if you don't have one. But the information is so readily available nowadays that, I mean, it's amazing. You actually can write a book by just looking at computers, looking at people talking about books and doing lectures and following up on some things they've said, because there's no reason today for any of us not to be informed.
Thank you, Dr. Bruce. 845-277-9250 if you've got a question or comment for Dr. Bruce. We're going over to 1683. 1683, you're live and on with Dr. Bruce. Do you have a question or comment?
Good afternoon, brothers.
Hey, brother. How are you?
Brother, it's been a rough week, but I'm all praise is due to Almighty God, Allah. I'm still here and kicking. And
all
I
right,
just want to
all right.
Dr. Bruce, thank you for doing what you do, for putting it out there. I agree with almost everything I've heard you say today, and I've heard it before, and we've got to continue to try to get information to our people. And Brother George, I want to thank you, too, for being out there and supporting and doing all the things that you're doing to help us continue our efforts to uplift our people. And I just want to add to this is, you know, all the things you hear Dr. Bruce say, Brother George say, some of you may have heard me say some things in the past as well on this show, is none of us know for sure when we talk about our history and going back millions of years, not just 400 years, millions of years. We don't know for sure. We can't tell
That's right.
you for absolutely 100% sure this is what happened, you know. But when we did our research, and we continue to research, okay, and we look at things, we listen, as one brother said, we listen and we read, and we got to be analytical. We analyze things. And at some point, each of us have to use what my great-grandmama used to say, common sense. You got to use our common sense. I remember one day she told me, she said, son, she called me man, that was my nickname. She said, you smart. You know your math, your science, and all that you really are. She said, you're intelligent in school. She said, but man, you ain't got no damn common sense. You know, and that was my great-grandmother, you know. And that hit me, and I grew to understand what she was talking about with common sense. And then by me being a Trekkie, a Star Trek fan, Spock was my favorite character because Spock said, what? Logic. Look at logic. So that's not logical. It's illogical. It doesn't make sense. So when you analyze things you are taught and told, you have to personalize it yourself and say, and use your common sense, your logic, and say, does that make sense to me? Did that actually happen? Could that have happened that way? And then you decide. You say, yes, I can see this happening. Yeah, example, can a man be executed on a Friday and say he rise 3 days later, which was supposed to be Monday, but ended up on Sunday, and then he come back and go do certain things? The story. Does that make sense to you? Your common sense, is it logic to you? Is it logical to you? Each one of us have to make that decision when we're trying to find out if something is right or wrong or true or not. See what I'm saying? And this past week when I was laying up in the hospital, watching shows I had seen before many times, one show I watched again, was Coach Carter. If y'all are familiar with Coach Carter. And it was, it was a line. Yes, sir. Coach Carter was, you know, basketball coach out in San Francisco. So
right.
I'm going to tell y'all all the story. But the brother turned the program around and uplifted some men, some boys, some black boys into black men, and trying to put them on the right path, as we are trying to do. And one of the characters in this movie, and I've seen the movie a thousand times, but I've never.
Now, brother, I'm
going
to have to cut you short because
okay.
we got to get to some other callers. So go ahead and make your point, and
okay.
So we can get to some others. Okay.
Okay. The line was in the movie, we fear our greatness. We fear our greatness.
That's a good way to end the conversation. That's a great way. That's good. Yes.
All right. Thank you. And also, thank you, Brother Booker, for calling, because Brother Booker's been in the hospital all week, but he forged the courage to call in and continue to talk to us. So get well, speedy recovery to you, and I'll call you after the show. Thank you, brother.
All right. 40-50.
You're on live. Marvin Rohn, Dr. Bruce, and Dr. George. You got a question or comment? 4050.
I have a comment. I had conversation with Dr. Bridges earlier this week. And my comment is, integration helped and hurt us. We're still meeting to meet to see when we're going to meet. I'm working on a project as we speak. We're still talking. We're rehashing history, which I respect and appreciate. But let me tell you, the people that don't look like us, they're taking over. Integration has helped and hurt us. I live in a community in Durham, North Carolina, that's not declared as a historic community. However, there were black men or black people that came to Research Strangler Park in the late 70s, early 80s that developed this community. Bruce, you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
And we're still talking. We're still needing to meet. When we going to meet? When I came to Durham in 1971, Pettigrew Street, Dr. Garrett Pharmacy was down there. You had the old Biltmore Hotel. You had the donut shop. You had the shoe shine shop. When they put that jail and Rick Hendrick Carlisle, I said, it's all over. You come up Fayetteville Street. Thank God Perry was able to save the old Dr. Moore's building. You go down Fayetteville Street, and I bet you that Haytown Historic Center is not backed by us. You take a right, you go down Lakewood. Those apartments, which I always thought they should have put the students, North Carolina Central students there. You look at the old Heritage Square with that grocery store that I wouldn't go in there if they paid me to shop. You go back up Fayetteville Street. Let me tell you,
yes,
and I said this earlier this week, UNC Chapel Hill has Franklin Street. Duke has 9th Street. North Carolina State has Hillsborough. We might not live to see it, Bruce, but it's not going to continue to look like it looked. Those kids at Central doesn't even have a decent, not even a coffee shop. Where the no bookstore was at, and I'm not taking away from anybody because I tried to make some investments last year. We got a Checkers down there. And I'm repeating Bruce's comment from Chess to Checkers. I posted on the website last year when the Checkers came up in August. What's coming there? Burger King. Something that's unhealthy for us. Obesity.
All right,
and the other thing, Dr. Bridges, that I meant to mention to you the other day.
I got to cut you right there, sister. Sister Bruce. I'm sorry.
Can I say one thing about dialysis?
I got 1 minute left, Sister. I got to talk about with Dr. Bruce, but we'll come back next week, and you can be first if you like. All right,
okay,
Dr. Bruce, real quick
Marvin,
comment.
I
want to
thank
you,
her for calling, because that's Sister's first time. She might not know what time we go off, but she's a good sister, and maybe she'll call in and be first next week. And I'm just going to want to thank all those callers for calling. And next week,
yes,
I'm going to cut off a little sooner so that we can get more calls. But let me make one comment, Brother Marvin. I'm going to give it to you. It's your show. From a sister named Wangari Matae. She said, she's a Kenyan sister. She's a Nobel Peace Prize winner. She says, you cannot enslave the mind that knows itself, that values itself, and that understands itself.
10 seconds, Dr. Bruce. All right, thank you. That's it for this week. 3365, we missed you, but we'll get you next week. 3383, we'll get back to you too. Thank you for calling. Peace and blessings.
You're sure to find, and the world will be better for this. That one man scorned and covered with scars, still strong.